Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 166, recorded on December 6th, 2012. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
It's going dang fine. How about you, Michael?
Pretty good. Pretty awesome. Good. Yep. Adam Christensen's also here from the MacCast. Actually, you do work for the Mac Observer, right?
Yeah.
Kind of.
I do some web stuff for them.
Sure. But mostly the MacCast. How's it going?
Yes.
And we'd be lost without Adam.
It's going okay. I'm very confused.
Yeah, so we'll jump into the confusion part with the introduction.
Michael, it's easy. Girls are innies, boys are outies.
Okay. And then never mind. I was going to make a joke about doors and the push and the pull difference, but that's different too. iTunes 11 was released last week, and yay. I think there was a span of time where actually it started in October because they told us we were going to be getting it in October, where I was checking for about a week. I was refreshing a page obsessively throughout the day, every weekday, and then it stopped when they said they weren't going to do it. And then into November, I was doing that for about a week until it was finally released, and then I could actually get some work done. So it's released. They previewed it for us. When did they preview it? September, I think it was. And I'm not sure how much we covered about it, but the big idea is they've simplified the interface substantially. And for some of us, they've done it more so than for others, according to Adam. So they still have the mini player, but it's different on some machines.
It's a much improved mini player.
In my opinion. So the first thing about the mini player is what they complained about during the last major version of iTunes, which was the green maximize button used to put you into the mini player, and then they changed that in iTunes 10, and now it does that again. It does it the maximize, the standard.
It maximizes like it's supposed to.
Yeah, and now they have another button for mini player. They have a mini player button, and the mini player is pretty cool. I guess it lets you get a little more out of the mini player. You can actually search for songs and see what's coming up next and rearrange some things. But according to Adam, he gets some more information than some of us.
The rest of you all.
Yeah, the rest of us.
Apple sent me the special one.
Yeah, apparently. So you get text on yours.
Yeah, so when I am not hovered over the mini player, my controls go away, the play, forward, and backward buttons, along with the AirPlay button. Huh. That all fades away.
You know what I found? Hey, I bet I figured it out just now. You ready for this?
You did. Yep.
Go into your system preferences and go to appearance. I think it's appearance, yeah. And then where is that option that lets you, I think it's in keyboard and settings, where you can tab through more than just the standard inputs. You know what I'm talking about? It's in the keyboard pane. So go to the keyboard preferences. And at the bottom, there's full keyboard access. Do you have it set to text boxes and lists only?
Yes.
That's why. Jeff, you probably have it set to all controls like me.
Hold on. What was I supposed to look at?
Seriously, that's going to change that?
Yeah, we'll check. I'll tell you why in a second.
I just launched System Preferences.
It totally did.
Yeah, so if you tab, because my play button or the reverse is highlighted, and that's what tipped me off to it. So I tabbed through a couple times, and then the text appeared. So if
Look at that. You can tab through, and if you use the arrow keys, it goes through your... I guess that jumps forward and backward in the list like it should.
Slag
what you're playing. goes to next album, next track, previous track, but that would be normal.
All right.
So,
well,
do I still have? So, if I don't have that checked, I don't have key. How is anybody supposed to figure that out?
Well,
we didn't tell everybody what was going on. So, what was happening? And this came up at my user group meeting last night. I was doing a demo, and I was showing iTunes 11. And when I was showing my mini player, a friend of mine in the audience noticed that next to my album art, when I was not hovered over the mini player with my mouse, it would show the artist's name and the currently playing track. Whereas on his mini player, it would only show the controls.
Right.
The AirPlay button and the play fast forward and rewind controls, or next track, previous track, whatever we want to call them. And Michael solved the mystery in that apparently if you don't have full keyboard access set to all controls, you get
the text. And yeah. Do you see why that is though?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's because when you go to the mini player, if you have all controls, then it allows you to jump through different controls, highlighting them. And you can use tab to do that. And when you go to the mini player, it highlights the reverse button. And so that is sort of a pseudo selection of that control. And so the idea of hovering away from it doesn't actually deactivate those controls. And so you'll never see the text. If you tab over to the list button, then it'll let you do that. So, getting back to iTunes 11 in general.
Wait a minute. So I have another comment about this mini player.
Okay, go for it.
Thing. The other thing about it is it's now its own window.
I don't know
if you noticed that.
You can have the mini player up, and you can also have the main view up at the same time.
Well, even more confusing, you can have them both closed at the same time.
Well, you could do that before. But
you could close the when you close the mini player, wouldn't it jump back to the main player before?
I don't remember.
Because it was a toggle, right? It was one or the other.
I think you could close the mini player and not have. So if you're in mini player mode, I'm doing it right now on another computer. Yeah, you just close it. Oh, same deal as before.
I've never tried that before. But now you can have them both open at the same time.
I sure wish there was a volume control right there. You have to click on the AirPlay button. Even if you don't have AirPlay, you have to click the AirPlay button to get your volume controls. But I guess this all points toward my main gripe with iTunes 11, which is that it's kind of buggy. And it makes sense that they waited a month, because who knows what was wrong with it before this.
Buggy how?
Just little odd inconsistencies like this. And if I think of any more off the top of my head,
like what?
I honestly can't recall at this very moment.
I mean, this isn't a bug. You mean like the annoyance thing of like, how would you know that this setting controls?
Well, that's totally a bug.
Player controls are up or down.
That's totally a bug. It doesn't.
You think so?
Yeah, it has nothing to do with having all controls selected in your preferences. It's more of you would never see that unless you tabbed over, which is sort of odd. It's just something that they didn't get around to figuring out at that point. At the point that they released it.
Seems like it's a feature rather than a bug.
You're holding it wrong.
Yes, you're holding it wrong.
My favorite feature of iTunes 11, and the reason why I was really excited about it, is the up next option. And
you mean iTunes DJ?
Is that what that is? Okay.
Yeah, it's
more
iTunes
integrated.
DJ,
but you can do a little bit more.
Reinvented and move forward.
Okay. Well, that just shows you what they needed to do that, because they didn't realize that iTunes DJ provided this functionality for
similar
me.
Functionality, not quite exactly the same, but I mean you could definitely have a playlist, and you could have people control that playlist from iOS devices, and you
right.
could add tracks.
But I don't care about that. That's not why I care about that at all.
No,
the reason
but, I mean,
why
it's,
I care
it's
about
the next evolution of the same feature, which
right.
is kind of cool.
Right. So the cool thing about this is I you double click on some music and it starts playing. And if you double click on some other music, then that'll start playing. And where from wherever you've double clicked, it will continue down that list. It has disregarded what you did before. And you're now playing another album, and then it'll go through by artist or however you have it sorted in your library. But sometimes maybe you're listening to an album and you think, oh gosh, that song reminds me of another song that I would really love to hear next. And so now you can do that. You can sort of insert a song into what you're listening to right now. So you're listening to an album and you think this song reminds me of something else. You go to that song and you click the little arrow next to it and you say, play next. And then that inserts it right in the, right after the song that's playing right now. And then after that song that you've just inserted plays, it will then go back to the order that you had before. And you can do that with songs or albums or however you want to do it. And I think it's a really nice way to deal with playing your music, because it just, it helps you out a little bit more. And if, for example, you're listening to an album and you think, oh, that song that's coming up, I don't like that song at all. You can actually control it and click the little X button and it will go away and it won't be played in that list of things, but it will continue on playing through the rest of the stuff. So it's sort of an ad hoc playlist that gets updated and maintained as you go and goes away when you're finished with it.
Plus it has the history. So if you want to go back and listen to that song that you heard five songs ago, you can click on the little history button and
yeah, exactly.
Add that back into the next song.
Yeah, that is pretty cool. Now, the one thing that confuses me is when you click the little arrow that shows you the play next and add to up next, what the hell is the difference between play next and add to up next? Because I don't get it. So if I say...
I'm with you. I haven't quite figured that out yet.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Because as far as I can see, add to up next and play next is the same thing. Or is it not?
Does one put it into that branched deviant list versus just right in line in the up next list, maybe?
Actually, okay, so I think I figured it out. Double clicking a song just starts playing a song and resets your whole list of what you're playing. Clicking play next adds it after the song that's playing next, right after that. And add to up next adds it to the bottom of up next.
Now, see, here's another problem. I don't have add to up next.
When you click the little arrow next to a song, you don't have
I have play next. And when I go down to add to, I get another pop-out menu and it lets me add to specific playlists. And it lists three. And I don't know why it picked three of these playlists.
That's pretty strange. What view are you in?
I'm in the mini player view.
See, I have add to up next there as well, but maybe you don't have anything playing.
I have a long list of stuff, but I don't have anything playing because I was pretending like I'm a podcaster.
See, because you have to have something in the up next list, I think, before the add to up next comes up. So the first thing you would do is you say play next, right? And then you have something in your up next list. It's this branch thing. The thing that gets confusing is what Michael was sort of talking about, is you start something playing. So say you're playing on shuffle, you're going to have a whole list of music, or you're playing a specific playlist, or you're playing a specific album, right? What up next allows you to do is sort of create this deviant list of divergent, I guess I should say, not deviant.
Right.
Divergent list. So you kind of branch off to stuff that you put into up next, and that is in a certain order. And if you use the add to up next or play next, it'll be the next track that plays. If you hit add to up next and you have a up next branch going at that point, it's going to get added to the end of that.
Right.
Now, so that's just confusing.
It is. But the difference is it play the add to or play next is goes right at the top, so right after what you're playing, and then the add to up next goes at the bottom.
Yep.
So I honestly
It sounds like it's smart enough to know if you don't have an up next playlist, it's not going to give you the add to up next because there is no up next list set up yet to add to.
And yet I have an up next list that I'm looking at.
Hmm.
Oh, you do?
Well, again, there's maybe another inconsistency.
Well, are you confused by the up next list? The up next list is not just the drop down thing. It has to say up next up at the top of the window. The little drop down.
Yeah, it says up next from Electronica Mix.
Interesting.
Maybe it's because you're using... Is that
and there's like 10 or 15 songs in my list right now.
Hmm. Who knows?
So what this is telling me is that we need more, more work on iTunes, because if the three of us
look at
this and we're going, I don't understand.
People are going, you guys are crazy.
How many podcasters does it take to run iTunes?
Jeff, so check this out. So you're playing that playlist. So like in my case, I have up next from music. And it's all my tracks because I play my main library on shuffle.
Okay.
Right? So let me go to the mini player and just double check this theory. But I'm going to guess if I click that little button, I can add to play next. Right? And then if I look at my up next list, what you'll notice is you have up next. I have up next one song, the one song that I just added. And then now it says under that, back to music. And yours will probably say back to whatever your playlist is. If you add something to the up next list. So there's like an up next branch. That's that sort of branch that I was talking about. So it diverges to this sort of up next thing and then comes back to the original thing that you were listening to before you started throwing stuff into up next. Am I making any sense?
Holy crap. Who designed this?
I like it. It hasn't been that confusing to me. Semantically, it seems like it is, but I don't think you need to understand that to figure out what's going on.
Okay, so one of the things that I really like about the new iTunes 11 is the new album view is very cool. You have a grid of your albums as you've had in the past, but when you click on it, you get the sort of iOS folder style opening right below it, which shows you a listing of the tracks, and to the right you see the album artwork. And a really neat thing about that is they use some kind of algorithm to determine what the background color should be of this so-called folder that has opened, and then they also take cues from the colors in the album art to theme the text in that as well. And it looks very nice. They got rid of cover flow. But is that something you guys are particularly upset about? Or
no, I never used that view.
Yeah, I used cover flow view only when people wanted to see something pretty.
Yeah.
That was it.
Yeah, I used it for my new music playlist just because there wasn't a whole lot of music in there to really worry about, because it's not very good for navigating through your music. It is, It looks nice, but honestly, a grid view where you can look through things pretty quickly and actually get some functionality out of it, I would say is much more useful than the cover flow view. I'm sure there will be a lot of people who are upset by it, but honestly, I think it looks pretty nice and it works quite well. If you want to get your old songs view back, there's the list view is under songs. If you haven't figured that out already, the artist's view I think is pretty interesting. So on your left, you get a list of the artists with a sampling of the album artwork from one of the albums of that artist. And you can click on it and get a listing, similar to the album view.
Yeah. Well, it's the album list view from the old version of iTunes, basically.
The album list view?
Yeah, they had an album list view in iTunes 10.
Okay.
It was one of the four, you know, you had the four little view buttons. So you had You had lists, you had covers, and you had like album list.
Yeah, it is. I'm looking at it now in the old iTunes. One of those views I never used, along with the I basically
see,
only
I always
used
had
list.
Trouble with the album view in iTunes 10.
The album view or the album list view?
Excuse me, the album list view.
Yeah.
It would break out full albums as individual tracks.
Yeah.
And yes. It thought they were all individual albums.
Yeah, if you don't have the metadata. There's a preference setting, too. I think you can...
Album artist or something.
Yeah, and see, it was inconsistent. Group sometimes an album would show up as it ought to, and other times not.
Yeah. So I don't know what that was, but that was just a cool sound.
I didn't even hear it.
Yeah.
But, so you've got that. You have a video view, which is just a grid. Playlists. Oh, I haven't even explored this view. So if you click playlists, it'll show you all of your playlists. And you get the sidebar there. So if you're upset about the way it looks and you don't have a sidebar, because by default, when you get the new iTunes, you don't have a sidebar, but as the Mac Observer dutifully points out, if you go to the View menu and click on Show Sidebar, ta-da, you have your sidebar. So you didn't get rid of that.
The other thing that you don't have that apparently some people are upset by is the status bar.
Those are the first two things I added back in.
The status bar. What is that?
The thing that tells you how many items you have, how many days it'll take you to play it, and how much storage that playlist or album or whatever is taking up.
Oh, that's on there.
The little bar at the bottom.
I didn't think I didn't get that.
Yeah, look at the bottom of your window. If you don't have view, well, because you probably turned it back on or it was on. If you go under view, hide status bar, you can get rid of it.
Status bar?
Yes, view. Go under the view menu.
Yeah.
Hide status bar.
There's no such option.
Are you looking at the songs view? Start there.
Songs view. That is not an option for me. It's just there. I just have the status bar at the bottom. It could be because I'm on Snow Leopard.
Oh.
Oh.
Troglodyte.
I'm on Lion, but hey.
Fair enough. Whatever.
We've got all the cats covered.
Yeah.
I wanted to make a comment about something you skipped over on the album view, the expanded album view.
Mm-hmm.
The two tabs. So by default, it's, you know, it shows your songs.
Songs, yeah.
You have the in the store thing. Because you don't have the Genius sidebar and all that store stuff anymore, that sidebar is gone, and it's sort of been replaced by, if you're in your album, you can click on the in the store option, and basically your album track list will slide over to the left, and then you get recommendations and other things from the store.
Oh.
But what I discovered was not so great last night during my demo, because I had read, oh, you can actually make purchases right off this list without actually having to go into the store.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like trying to demo it to people, and I hadn't tried this beforehand. I click on an album, and it just starts downloading it.
So you just bought an album?
I bought it. It didn't pop up and say, are you sure you want to buy this?
It's an album you like.
No, it's some live Asia album. So, hey.
Yeah, whatever. Okay. You'll be all right with that.
Yeah.
That's going to be awesome at all the raves.
Yeah. Is Asia for raves? I think that's more like hair music.
Well, yeah, I'm just not going
to. It's for when I drive up to Washington State in my van now, since they've legalized marijuana. I can.
Yes, that's it right there. That's a much better avenue than where I was headed with this, which tells you just how bad it was about to get.
Uh-huh. My van with the bubble window in the back.
Ooh, that sounds like fun. God,
that's awesome. Please tell me you have shag on the walls.
In this fantasy van. Okay. Now, can't you look at photos from certain artists, supposedly? In that view as well?
In the artist view.
Oh, in the artist
view. No, maybe it's an album.
It is the artist view. You're right. That's why I couldn't find that. That makes sense. Gallery. I can look at some pictures of Coldplay if I want. Three.
I could never find any. The bad part about this feature is every artist I would click on, it would be like, nothing. Nothing.
It needs to be an artist that Steve Jobs had personal relationships with.
Which means apparently he had personal relationships with David Bowie. Because
like the fact that, the fact that there's no gallery available for Avril Lavigne is odd to me.
I find it odd that you have Avril Lavigne.
I like Avril Lavigne.
Fair enough.
Maybe Avril's a vampire and that's why there's no photos.
He looks kind of like a vampire.
So there you go.
There you go.
So apparently Steve liked Bowling for Soup then.
Okay. You too. There's probably some pictures of you too there. Nope, nothing. Interesting.
See, it's odd.
Very inconsistent.
Yeah. So I don't know why you would add a feature when there's, unless they're planning on really expanding this, but
well,
I just don't see this as being a big draw for a lot of people. But maybe it sort of feels like what they're trying to do is bring back some of the stuff you would get when you would get album, you know, physical albums or CDs, and you had the tray liners or the back of your album. You'd have all those tour photos and things like that. So it, in a way, does, I guess, kind of bring that experience back to listening if the images are there.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure. I think it would be nicer if they didn't show the gallery button if there wasn't anything there.
But that would be smarter. Totally agree with that.
Interesting. So, what else do we have? Anything else to talk about with iTunes 11?
It confuses me.
Yeah, it confused me for a while, too. They will be, according to Walt Mossberg, he's got some privileged information saying that there are some album art issues that are going to be fixed, as well as the ability to search for duplicate music, which is one of those things that was omitted here. Does it feel like an actually rewritten version to you, or does it just seem like a new skin?
It's been pretty snappy for me.
Yeah, I've noticed it's more responsive.
Seems like it. I don't know. Overall, I'm pretty happy with it. Another big change that is kind of cool is when you go into your movies and TV shows and stuff like that, it shows everything that you've purchased.
Oh yeah.
So you don't have to go over to the purchase, you know, part of the store to see where your purchase content is. It'll just show a little iCloud icon in the upper right hand corner of the artwork or whatever to let you know that that's online versus local.
Yeah, I didn't realize that I had actually purchased the movie American Psycho, but apparently I have.
Well, I have a lot of
watch it anytime you want.
Yeah. There's a lot of free TV content that I realized that I downloaded at some point.
Yeah, you can delete that, though. Did you see that?
Yeah.
Ooh, home videos. Cool. What would I put in there?
Oh, that's actually, that's a good one to point out, because a lot of people don't. So what happens now if you rip your own content or you bring in your own content to iTunes into the movie section, it's going to drop into the home videos section by default.
Right.
And so you need to go into the metadata. You need to select the video file and do the get info thing. And in that home video is now a new media type. So you need to change the media type from home video to movie or vice versa. Like in my case, I had a bunch of stuff that was already loaded that were home videos. And now I can separate those from like my actual movies, which is actually kind of nice in this view.
Cool.
So you can put all your personal, you know, videos over on the home video side. Keep that separated.
That's nice.
Now, have you guys checked out the new device view that they have for iOS devices and iTunes?
Yeah, everything's a little drop down or a little pop up.
I think it's
they're kind of getting rid of modal dialog boxes and stuff and panels and things as a.
Yeah, I like that, and I think that the view is much cleaner now.
I don't like the fact that to get the number of apps and how much storage stuff is taking up, I have to hover over the stupid little thing and get the little pop-up.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why it was so hard to put just a little bit of text, one line of text underneath those.
Hey, they got to keep it clean. They got to keep it squeaky, squeaky clean.
Well, okay. How about this? You know, at least on the bars that are long enough, if they could just put that information right at the end of the bar, about that.
Yeah.
I think Apple wants it, as Michael said, squeaky clean.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is.
I sure wish that they would people to preload music onto their devices if they have iTunes Match. I sort of assumed that they would realize they need to do that in this version. Of course, they haven't. So, and now, I have to ask, you guys both have iTunes Match, right?
I'm not using iTunes Match anymore.
Okay.
I love it.
Well, for me, what I like to do, because I bought a 64 gigabyte iPhone because I have a lot of music that I want to carry around with me, and I don't feel like using up my data bandwidth on downloading music and streaming music that I already have. I would much rather put it on there. But if we're talking 30, 40 gigs of music, there's no way I'm going to wait around for that thing to sync over the air. I feel like it'll probably lock up, or I'll want to maybe leave the house before it's finished. And so the way I was doing that with my iPhone 4, I plugged it in and synced it with USB and then turned iTunes Match on, and then it just took all that music and said, "Hey, oh, okay, this is music from your iTunes Match library. That's cool. Well, I'll just keep that here, and the rest of the music that iTunes Match has would just appear alongside it." But now on my iPhone 5 with iOS 6, if I load 30 gigs of music onto it and then turn on iTunes Match, it says, "Oh, okay, that's cool. I'll just delete all of that music for you and replace it with nothing except for a list of stuff that you could download."
That's just awesome.
Yeah. And you know what? I even called Apple, and the representative that I talked to was really confused about the whole situation. And we talked about it for about 20 minutes. And finally he came back off of hold and told me, "You know what? You're going to have to take it in and you're going to have to get it exchanged." And I'm like, "So you're not even going to have me restore my phone. You're not even going to try that. You're just thinking that it's a hardware issue." And he says, "Well, yes, I do." And I said, "Okay, well, I'll just talk to a second tier person now, please." So I thought that was interesting. But is this the behavior that you've seen, Adam, or have you not tried that?
It's been so long since I enabled it. I do everything just through iTunes Match. So
you download buttloads of music over Wi-Fi?
Over cellular, even?
Well, Wi-Fi. We'll just say or cellular, whatever. But I mean, if you don't do that...
I don't even
think
about it anymore. I just hit play and it plays.
Okay, now see, that's an awesome statement. That's how it should be.
Yeah.
I mean, I pull up my music library, all my music's there, I say I want to listen to that, and I hit play, and I don't even think about it.
But it's something that you do have to think about, because if you want to go on a plane or somewhere else that you don't have internet, for example, or you don't want to use up all of your bandwidth.
See, I don't think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It frustrates me.
It has come up once or twice over the last year where I've been like, "Oh, I'm on my iPad and I don't have a connection and I can't get music." But I don't know. I think when I originally set it up, I had a bunch of music that was already on my devices, and I think that stayed.
Yeah, that's how it used to work, and maybe it's an issue with me. It's very possible that I need to restore my phone and that would fix it, but it did delete all of the music from my phone. But,
well, and it might do that if I did a restore and set up as new. You know, it's going to do that if I do a restore and set up as new, but I think when I do, I always do mostly do restore and then restore from backup, and it usually puts all that stuff back on it.
Yeah.
At least as far as I know. I haven't been paying that close attention, so maybe it's not on there, but I mean, based on what it's showing me and my devices and in terms of how much music is stored on there, there's definitely something in there.
Well, I'll play with it. And if anybody has any ideas, send an email feedback
at wefcommunicators.com. This is a good time. You know what? That's not true at all. Yeah, so I don't even pay attention. So like on my iPhone right now, there are only 87 actual songs.
So you don't have your whole library like you thought?
Or no, at some point it wiped it off.
Yeah, I'm guessing that was iOS 6 when that happened.
But I haven't even been paying. You can see how close attention, how much I've noticed. Yeah. Because
I mean, I didn't notice
it play and it plays.
I didn't notice until I started thinking, oh, that's weird. I thought I put Radiohead on my iPhone. I wonder why that cloud icon is there. Oh, well, I'll just hit play. And then I started thinking, well, I sure want to make sure I have Radiohead on my iPhone next time that I get to my computer and sync it, because I don't want to have to always do that streaming thing. And I went and did it, and then that's when I ran into all the problems. So
yeah, they do need to get that figured out. And I said that from day one when they launched Match, that it's stupid that I can't go into, just like you would with photos and, you know, PhotoStream, I can select specific photo albums that I want to sync, but I'm also getting all my PhotoStream if I choose to have that on. So that's streaming content, or, you know, content that's automatically loaded through the cloud, versus content that I said, this, I want this content always on my device. Mm-hmm. I want this album and that album, and always sync those. There's no reason why I shouldn't be able to say, I want these four albums, these five playlists, always on my device, no matter what. And then I'll stream down the rest. It's just weird.
Yeah. Well, hopefully Eddie Q will get that sorted out for us.
And see, you guys just reaffirmed to me why it is that I bailed on the iTunes Match thing a while ago.
Oh, yeah. I mean, honestly, the combination of having my iTunes library just sync to my phone old style, and having Spotify, which I already pay for, which is a great service, honestly, that would suffice for me, because for the most part, I know what music I want to have on my phone, and whatever music I want to listen spur of the moment, I just turn on Spotify, and I find that pretty easily. But what is good about iTunes Match for me is the ability to sync between computers. That really helps me out. And I thought with iOS 6 and the whole being able to actually stream the music, that was going to be a fairly significant thing for me and a reason to have iTunes Match on, but I'm not sure I'm going to keep it on anymore.
I like I said, I love it. I'm sold. I just renewed, so.
Oh, okay.
The one other thing to add to this is, have you downloaded the remote app?
I have.
Remote app?
Yeah. And I think that has awesome. Been improved, yeah.
Yeah, I am very happy with the new remote app.
So what part of the new remote app do you like?
Just that it's totally consistent with the iTunes view, and I wish that the remote app was my music app on my iPad, because I hate the freaking music app. And if the music app just looked like the remote app does now, it would be perfect. You know, it has.
You're talking
the right
on your iPad.
Yeah, I'm talking about on my iPad.
Okay.
Yeah. And you know, it's got the Up Next playlist is on there. You've got all, you know, it's like almost feature for feature match. It's a look for look match, so it's very intuitive on where to click, where to go. Yeah, it just looks nice.
It does look nice, and I found that it's much more reliable than the old remote app. I had problems all the time where remote wouldn't find my Apple TV or my iTunes playlist. And I'd have to quit the apps, or I'd have to go back to my computer and relaunch iTunes. And
yeah,
it just always sucked. But it's consistent now that I fire up the app, it sees iTunes, it sees my Apple TV, and it just works.
Yeah. And I think that one of the things that I was annoyed by with the old remote app is that it would very often lose the connection to the library with which it was controlling.
Yes.
And now with this one, it seems to almost never do that. And so there's almost no lag when switching between apps or turning your phone back on to change a song or something like that. So it's much nicer that way, too.
And the album view has that cool expanded view thing, and it does the whole sampling, the album art and colors and all that stuff as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool. I like it. I like it a lot. So, Apple has begun selling unlocked iPhone 5s, finally. Took a little while. Is it actually? It is iPhone 5, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Or you could have just bought one from Verizon.
Yeah. If you didn't want to lose
your
unlimited.
Okay, so if you wanted one that was just GSM, now you can do that.
Right. Yeah, just GSM. Well, you can't get 4G or LTE on the unlocked Verizon phones. So there is that. But if you want to get one, it's $649, $749, or $849. Am I correct in saying that the unlocked Verizon iPhone 5s would not work on AT&T's LTE frequency?
I believe that's correct.
Okay, that's what I thought. So yeah, if you want to do that, you want to get an unlocked GSM that will work on AT&T's frequency for a buttload of money, but without a contract, you can go ahead and do that now. And in addition to that, the shipping estimates for the iPhone 5s have come down significantly. They're now down to almost just a couple days, 2 to 4 business days is what I'm looking at now. So that's very nice. You don't have to do the ridiculousness that I had to with the reservation and waiting and making sure that it's right at 10 p.m. and all that. So that's much nicer. If you haven't already gotten your iPhone 5, now is a good time to actually go ahead and do it. I know I have a buddy in San Francisco who's, you would think it'd be pretty easy for someone so close to Apple to be able to get an iPhone 5.
I think you have to be a lot closer to China.
Yeah, that would make more sense. Actually, yeah. Well, San Francisco's closer to China than Rockford is, I guess.
True.
And T-Mobile has announced that they will begin selling Apple products next year.
But they're not saying which ones.
I know. That was the interesting part about it. They didn't say iPhones. They said Apple products. So maybe we'll be getting EarPods from T-Mobile.
Yeah. Hey, they also announced today that they are dropping subsidized prices for their cell phones.
Yeah, which
in 2013.
That does make it sound like they'll probably get the iPhone just based on that whole thing.
Wait a minute. They're not going to do any subsidy.
I think that's the case.
You'll be able to buy your phone, but instead of having to pay the full price up front, what they'll do is add like $20 to your phone bill every month. And so you'll pay it off in installments.
So that means you do have a contract.
Oh yeah. You're doing a 2-year contract. You're paying full price for the phone, and you'll see like an extra $20 on your bill every month.
Okay. So it's like essentially
you get,
the same
wait,
price
you get $20 as back. So it's sort of reverse subsidizing.
No, you'll see an extra $20 that you have to pay on your bill every month. So what they're doing is they're financing a full price phone to you.
Just kind of in the same way that the other carriers do it, except that they sort of roll that into the service cost.
Right. And in this case, it's a loan.
Yeah.
So you make like $100 $100 deposit on your phone when you get your contract. And then the remaining $450 or whatever it costs for that phone is added on as a monthly charge.
I gotta say that sounds.
I guess I'm
too
confused.
Complicated.
That doesn't sound. How is that different?
It's different in that instead of presenting it as hey you're buying a phone for $100,
right?
And that's it. They're just flat out telling you yeah we are financing this phone.
Oh.
And so no subsidies at all. So I guess really what it comes down to is they're changing how they want customers to think about the total cost of their phone.
Gotcha. They're making it more obvious, more transparent as to what's going on.
I would say more confusing to people.
Well, only because you've been conditioned to this messed up model where you think you're getting a free phone.
Yeah, okay.
You hear people say it all the time. Oh, that phone's free.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
It's like, no.
And this is why it's going to be a problem, I think, for T-Mobile. Because people aren't going to get that you never get a free phone.
Right. They're going to say, oh, I don't want to pay that for, I could get a free phone from AT&T. I don't want to go to T-Mobile and do all that.
Yeah. Why should I spend $400 for my phone at T-Mobile when I can get the exact same thing for $79 at AT&T?
Right. But what they're not getting, and then all the while AT&T or T-Mobile will be saying, but you're paying the same amount monthly.
Right.
And people still won't get it. So we'll see how that goes for them. Did you see that Google released a new version of Gmail for iOS, Gmail 2.0? The big new feature is that it supports multiple accounts. And that makes me happy.
I can't believe it took them this long to do it.
I think we were talking about this Gmail 1.0 maybe a year and a half ago. And we were talking about how terrible it was because it was just a web app.
Yeah. A web app, you could only access one account and... yeah, that's just fracking awesome.
But the great thing about this now, okay, so it has push notifications as it has had for quite some time since it hasn't been a web app. And now it supports multiple accounts. It has a very clean, nice looking UI. Of course, it has all of the Gmail niceties like labels and threaded conversations, and you can search through your entire Gmail history. And, of course, it has the archiving and deleting and just all the nice stuff that you expect from Gmail as a Gmail user. The one thing that I don't like about it, and I don't know if you guys have noticed this yet, but with the multiple accounts, you get that, but you have to specifically switch from one account to another. There's no merged inbox. And, of course, 2 years ago, I wouldn't have complained about that because Apple wouldn't have given me that yet. But now that I've had it and I like it, I wish I had that for Gmail. So, but I mean, so it's an
they're
improvement.
Still behind.
They are, but I have switched for the time being from mail.app on iOS to the Gmail app. And so far, it hasn't been very painful. But it's only been like 2 days, so we'll see how that goes. They've also released a new version of the YouTube for iOS app, finally supporting the iPad and the tall screen of the iPhone 5.
Yay on the iPad time. Thing.
And AirPlay.
Like proper AirPlay.
Proper
AirPlay. Screwed up AirPlay that they were giving us before.
Yeah, they were just giving us audio before. Now you can actually do video. One thing that I don't like about the new YouTube app, though, is that there are no on-screen volume controls, which is kind of dumb. They just can't give us what you want. But there is voice search. That's kind of neat. I haven't used it yet, but I'm sure someone will. That cool Google voice search.
Am I alone in not being excited about the voice search?
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that.
Okay.
That's why I haven't used it, because I'm not excited about it. But it's neat, I guess.
I had an interesting conversation. One thing I immediately noticed about the YouTube app, and actually I'm seeing this as a trend in a lot of apps, and I had a conversation with Ken Case at one point Omni Group.
Yep.
About, you know, they were talking about when he was specifically talking about multi-touch gestures when they came out, and all the different kinds of cool things they figured they could do with multi-touch gestures in their user interface for, like, having stuff, you know, come up and be able to do different actions, stuff like that. And what they slowly realized as they were developing stuff was that, well, if we do that, we're going to have to do all this instruction. Like, we're going to have to, like, train our users what all these gestures are. We have to, like, communicate to them. And that doesn't ultimately create a really intuitive or smart or, you know, nice experience necessarily for the customer, because you're having to learn. And I'm finding that more and more with these different apps. And I only bring it up for the YouTube app because I notice on the iPad app at the top of the screen now, and I don't know how to make it go away or if you can even make it go away, there's the whole swipe to sign in and access your video thing so that you know to swipe from left to right so that you can actually find the additional controls and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so they take up, you know, maybe 50 pixels at the top of the screen just for that little instruction. And it has to be up there all the time, because without it, you wouldn't be able to figure out the swipe gesture to find those controls, right? So they got to, like, tell you about them.
I think you can just tap on that, though.
Can you?
You
can't.
Yeah, you can just tap.
No.
No. You can tap on the... I'm actually not seeing the text that you're speaking of.
Are you on the iPad?
iPad version? Yeah, I'm on the iPad. Do you have to be...
Maybe it'll go away the next time I launch it. Maybe it's only a first launch thing.
I think it is, because I don't see it now. And I believe there. I did see it before.
Well, regardless, but how many apps do you have now that where it pops up and it has to go through like a whole wizard tutorial thing on like how to use the app?
Yeah, I was just looking at Snapseed today and it has that.
Yeah, and that's even fairly intuitive. And I guess if it's just a few instructions, maybe it's not so bad. But I kind of also think that, you know, maybe we need to think like Ken Case was thinking, where it's like, yeah, we can do a lot of cool stuff, but
yeah,
shouldn't our user interfaces and our things be intuitive enough that someone could just figure it out without having to do instructions?
See, that would be awesome. But I'm seeing that problem with Apple apps now, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I guess it's not as bad as it was way back in the old days where you had to read a, you know, 50-page manual, but...
Only 50 pages? Man, you were using easy apps.
True. 200-page manual. Regardless. But anyway, it's just an interesting thing that I noticed, and it got me thinking when I first launched this app. It's like, oh, there's another one of those things. And in my case, it's not going away, so I don't know. That was more the annoyance, was like, if it was only there once, you know, it's sort of a one-time training thing, that's one thing, but weird. I still like the YouTube app, though, better than, you know, because I had tried the Jasmine app, which a lot of people really liked.
Yeah.
Because it had an iPad version, you know, like 2 months ago.
Right.
But I don't know. Something about the YouTube app is just more intuitive to me.
Yeah, I have not made a conclusive decision on that yet. I still have Jasmine on my phone. One thing that you can't reply or... Well, you can't rate comments at all in the YouTube app. And I don't believe you can even reply to comments there, which is pretty frustrating. No, you can't do anything. But you can reply in Jasmine. So there's that.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Oh, yeah, no. Michael, you don't know the new gesture.
Oh, I don't know the gesture.
The new universal gesture for every app.
Is it a middle finger?
You can't. No. Well, this is what I recommend to everybody from now on, is that you do take your middle finger, put it on the screen, and pull down.
Okay.
So go to the comments tab, take your middle finger, put it on the comments, and pull down. Mine has an add to comment box when I am.
Oh, I see.
So because that's what everybody's doing now, is they're hiding the search box, because that's the thing that Apple did, you know, under the top menu bar, because that's really intuitive and everybody's going to find that control there.
Yeah, nobody needs to input anything.
Yeah, that's just stupid. Why would we ever need to input anything? Remember, the iPad is a content viewing device, not a content creation device.
Unless you ask Apple, and then they'll tell you it's for content, for creating content as well as viewing it.
Which would include comments.
Right, exactly.
But at least that's becoming a consistent thing that everybody seems to be glomming on to, is that, you know, hide your search box or your input box under and just use a downward swipe gesture. I think it goes along with everybody using the pull down to refresh thing.
Yeah, I do like the pull down to refresh.
Oh, I do too. It's a really cool thing. But again, another one of those that's really, unless you knew about that, it's not intuitive to a new user.
Yeah, grandma's not going to know how to refresh. Nor is she going to even know what to do about refreshing. She's not going to say, how do I refresh? She's going to say, what's refresh?
And she's going to more say, every time I open this app, it's got the same stuff. I thought this was supposed to be news.
No,
what she's trying to say is every time I do the YouTube, it's the same stuff.
Every time I go into this little envelope, I'm expecting to get more comics about cats.
Which actually probably is happening, so she won't.
Luckily, I think most apps, when you at least launch them, new, you know, if they've been fully closed down, will will refresh their content. But
yeah,
could be a problem if you have, you know, background apps and
You might get behind on your cat emails. So
exactly.
Be vigilant, people. Tell your grandmothers how to refresh or not.
Otherwise, she's going to miss out on cat videos.
Just don't tell them how to forward it to you. So how do you guys feel about Will.i.am's new camera?
You know, it was funny when it was the marketing was going out, and then when it came out that it was the Juju tablet guys that were making that product, that just said everything.
The Juju tablet?
Exactly.
Yeah, the TechCrunch tablet.
That it never happened.
Oh, the it never happened tablet.
It was like total vaporware. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And then we got to see the whole public meltdown and.
Oh right, right, right.
It was really bad.
It was. It was like just a ridiculous soap opera.
Michael Arrington got taken to the cleaners by this guy.
So is this Michael Arrington's partnership with Will.i.am to make a?
No, it's the guy who
Bling Blong camera
swindled Michael Arrington and TechCrunch, who is now doing the camera.
Yeah.
So if they have a Kickstarter, I would not give your money.
But it's backed by musical sensation Will.i.am.
Oh, well then it's okay, Michael.
And it's and it has his name kind of in it. Okay, so this the one for the 4S, which yeah, they have one for the 4S already. So it's a body in which to place your iPhone 4 or 4S that gives you a lens. A bigger, better lens, I guess, and a slide-out keyboard because everybody's been wanting that, and it's
well, and a new sensor.
Yeah,
no, not on the iPhone 4S or the 4, just on the 5, and only the next one. It'll have its own sensor and a flash. Actually, no, I think that the 4 and 4S one has a flash as well, but the 5 will have its own special sensor. To give it, what was it, 18 megapixels?
Yeah. See, you can see how much I care. Close attention I was paying.
Exactly. And they start at like $300 or something, don't they?
Yeah, for the big dorky golden plastic case that gives you a slide-out keyboard that nobody cares about.
$300 for a slide-out keyboard? How could you possibly go wrong?
That's like as much as I spent on my phone, yo.
Yo. You just made me say yo at you.
Yeah, I did. All right. So, is there anything else this week? There wasn't a lot of news to talk about this week in terms of iOS stuff. I guess the Apple TV was updated, but I couldn't find if there was anything notable about that except for compatibility. The new iTunes.
I haven't even bothered to do the update yet, mm-hmm. So I guess it shows you how much of value I was finding in it.
Which update?
For the Apple TV.
It's like the 5.
Oh, I haven't updated mine either because I heard it. Some people having theirs be bricked.
Oh. That would suck. Sorry to those, really sorry to those people who did that. But.
Or locked up. I didn't read the full articles yet, so I don't have the details, unfortunately. But I saw that going through the feed.
Was that the thing with Ethernet problems?
That was it, and it seemed to be, you're right. That's right. It was limited to only updating over Ethernet, which wouldn't be a problem for me because mine's not hooked up that way. So it was one of those real, real weird edge cases.
I keep forgetting that you can even do that.
Update?
No, that you can hook your Apple TV up with Ethernet.
And see, that's my preferred way to use it because then I don't have to worry about wireless dropouts.
Yeah, I have that problem. I need to rearrange my routers in my house. Because there are a lot of walls in between it. But that's another story.
I have late breaking news on our mini player album art text thing.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So you don't have to, if you want to leave that setting where you have full keyboard controls set up. And this comes from, I guess, TUAW had a post over on their forums. And it's also on Stack Exchange.
You know things are going well for you when you have a post about your software on Stack Exchange.
Yeah. Well, you just need to change the focus to the up next list.
Yeah. No, I told you
the
that.
The player controls. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you say that earlier and I just missed it?
I did.
Oh.
Yeah, just do tab. Actually, the easiest way to do it is shift tab. So it'll jump over to the search. Otherwise, you have to do tab, 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 tab.
Oh.
So just
shift tab. Sorry, I missed that earlier.
So
just a little review for everybody. I wanted to make sure everybody got that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to be helpful.
Yeah.
That's very nice of you.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else to report? Or should we get on to our iDevice picks? Ready for picks? Jeff, do you have a pick this week?
All right. So my pick this week is an app that goes along with, I guess it's a social service, networking service thing. And it's the Goodreads app. And Goodreads is a service. It's free, so is the app, that you keep track of the books you're reading, the books you want to read, and then your friends are doing the same. And so you can keep track of what you're reading and what your friends are reading and find new books to read. And then you can rate the books, do your own little reviews. And it's just kind of a cool little service that you can use. And the app they have for the iPad, I think, is really nice, too. So there you go. Goodreads.
Cool. And it's free.
And it's free.
Free, free. All right. Adam, what do you got for us?
I have an app, and I'm trying to find it on here, a game. And actually, the reason I found out about this game is that I am a board game fan, and I have a local board game store that I go to. And I found this card game called Timeline. And it's actually starting up here, so you might hear that. And when I opened up the box, it comes in this really cool metal tin, and it's a little card game. And they had a little ad saying, hey, we also have an iPad version. So whether you get the physical one or the iPad version, the basic concept is you get a stack of cards, and they have different sort of categories. So they'll have, like, inventions or artwork or art or culture or machines, different categories. And what they are is they'll be objects, and you have to place them in a timeline in terms of when they were discovered or invented.
Oh.
And yeah. And so it's a lot of fun. It's also kind of educational, and it's also, I'm finding, very surprising to figure out, you know, the sort of timelines of things. So, you know, when a stethoscope versus a syringe was invented or those sorts of things.
Oh, cool. I'm guessing the syringe was invented first.
I don't remember, unfortunately. And they do have little expansion packs. So the different categories, sorry, I didn't, the themes are inventions, discoveries, events, moments, arts and literature, and music. And you can toggle the different things on and off. It has a two-player mode, so you can play sort of across the iPad or side by side. You can also do the whole pass and play thing. And it's a very simple, it seems like, you know, in concept it's very simple. And actually playing it, it gets really challenging. So what it'll do is it lays out all the cards, and then once you drop a card in the timeline, it will show you the date and then put it into place. And it, obviously, if you get it wrong, then you have to draw a new card, and you don't get to play down that card. And I forget, you try and get as many cards as you can. It's been a little while since I played it. I think up to, I forget how many you'll put in your timeline, but it's I forget how much it is too. Unfortunately,
it's $3.
Come prepared. $3, $2.99. And it's called Timeline.
Cool.
And I think the physical card game was about $10. So, and it does come in this little cool little tin. And then they have little expansions that you can get for the different sorts of categories and stuff like that.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So my pick this week comes from one of the people I follow on Appler, Mr. Brad. I won't say his last name because I don't know if he cares. But Brad on Appler recommended AV Streamer HD and I finally got around to giving it a try. The app allows you to, using VNC technology, watch video on your Mac. And now you say, why would you want to do this? Why would you care? Well, sometimes, let's say South Park, for example, you can't watch South Park on your iPad or your iOS device because they just don't. You go to southparkstudios.com and they don't allow you to watch that on your iPad. And so the way to get around this is to use a VStreamer. And so you just simply get a VNC view, just a virtual view of your Mac, and it plays on your Mac, but the audio and the video shows up on your iPad, very low latency. The audio syncs up almost perfectly with the video, and it works very well. I was quite impressed. I've played it with a couple other pieces of software that claim to do the same thing, and this is the only one that's actually done a good job of actually providing that service. So now you can watch anything that is Flash video that will play just fine on your Mac, that won't work on your iOS device. You can just use AV Streamer or AV Streamer HD. I would recommend going with the AV Streamer HD because it's universal. And right now, it's only 99 cents. So, check it out.
All right. And Michael, I just realized, I didn't realize this app has a what's called a library mode. So you can look at all the cards, as well as it has a search functionality built in. So in answer to your question, the stethoscope was invented or discovered in 18, or invented, I guess, in this case, 1816. And the hypodermic needle or syringe was 1841.
Oh,
well, there you go.
Cool. So with that, are we done? Are we good? Anything else to talk about, or are we ready to close up?
Let's close up shop and go have some beers.
Okay.
Awesome.
Are we meeting at the same place tonight?
Yep.
Okay. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media, backbeatmedia.com. You can find all the show notes and everything else at wehavecommunicators.com. You can send us an email, feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. He's at Jay Gamet on Twitter. You can find Adam Christensen at the MacCast, maccast.com, and at MacCast on Twitter. And you can find me on Twitter at Michael Johnston, or you can find all of us on Appler too. So if you haven't joined up on Appler, use the invite code friend of WHC. That's We Have Communicators. And you can join in on the fun trying out Appler. And I'm hoping that it's usually a bad idea to make promises publicly about certain things like putting out a public beta, but I'm thinking the beginning of January is when I'll be opening it up to everybody. So,
well, at least you gave yourself a nap by saying I'm thinking.
Yes, exactly. Thank you for pointing that out too. So with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An internet.
How are we going to communicate this?
With a stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do?